such things to happen. Do you know what hysteria is? It is a thing which actively is connected with the sex development of a person. Hysteria is connected with one of the most important female organs and functions, and often a person will have hysterectomy, which sometimes affects them very badly by changing the whole functioning of the body. Many years ago, people had the belief that only women could have hysteria, but nowadays they are starting to know better, because every man is a bit of a woman, and every woman is a bit of a man, and the two are remarkably similar. It is now known that each sex has all the organs of the other in some degree or other. Hysteria, then, is now a man's complaint as well as that of a woman. Hysteria is a great inhibitor of things to do with the occult. If a person gives way to moods and has wide fluctuations of electrical output from the brain, then that person will assuredly stop himself or herself from astral traveling, from telepathy, from clairvoyance, and from other metaphysical phenomena. We must be of even temperament, we have to be balanced before we can deal with the occult sciences. Remarkably enough, many people look upon clairvoyants or telepaths as being neurotic or imaginative, or something of that nature. They look upon the telepath and the clairvoyant as being unbalanced. Nothing could be further from the truth. Only the fake clairvoyant, only the fraudulent telepath can be neurotic or unbalanced because, as they are fakes and fraudulent anyhow, their state of mental health has no bearing on the subject. We say most definitely that one can only be telepathic, can only be clairvoyant, when the mind is functioning normally and the brain waves are fairly even and unruffled. The waves from the brain must be smooth, that is, there must be no sudden peaks or depressions which will upset reception. We who are telepathic have to receive messages, therefore we have to be quiescent, we have to be receptive, which means that we have to keep our minds open. If our minds are in a furore all the time, if we are so busy thinking of our own miseries that we are not perceptive to the thoughts, 152, of others, then we shall not receive telepathically nor clairvoyantly. Again, the neurotic person cannot be clairvoyant genuinely. The psychopath is not a telepath. Keep your mind free from upsets. When you feel irritated, or when you feel that the cares of the world are heaped upon your shuddering, sagging shoulders, take a deep breath, then take another and yet another. Think, will all these matters worry you in 100 years' time? Or will they worry anyone else in 100 years' time? If they are not going to worry you in 100 years' time, why should you worry about them now? This business of keeping calm is of utter importance for our health, both physical and mental, so we suggest that when you start to become irritable, you come to a halt and ask yourself why you are feeling bad-tempered. Why are you so gloomy, so miserable? Why are you upsetting the lives of other people around you? Remember, too, that in being gloomy, bad-tempered, irritable, miserable, and all the gamut of bad emotions, you are hurting yourself only. You are not hurting the other person. He might be a bit tired of tantrums, but you are poisoning yourself as surely as if you took arsenic or rat poison or cyanide of potassium. Some of the people around you probably have far greater problems than you, yet they are not showing the effect of strain. If you are showing the effects of strain, it means that you do not have the correct perspective. It means that possibly, not inevitably, you may not be of the same mental and spiritual status as the other person. We are upon earth to learn, and no normal human is ever given too much to learn at one time. We may feel that we are being persecuted, victimized, we may feel that we are the subject of an unkind malignant fate, yet if we really reflect upon the matter, we can see that we are not overstressed, we only think that we are. Let us get back to children again. A child may be given homework. He may think that there is a shocking amount of homework, especially as he wants to go out playing games or fishing, or chasing after a member of the opposite sex. He is so busy thinking of playing games and fishing that he does not even devote the normal 1/10 of his mind to his work, and so it appears to be hard. Because he is making no real effort to get through his work, he finds that it takes far longer than it would do. 153. Any thinking person. He gets tired of the work, he does not devote 1/20 of his consciousness to the work, and he becomes more and more frustrated. Eventually he complains to his parents that he has too much homework, that all the strain is making him ill. The parents complain to the teacher that the child has too much work to do. No one thinks of knocking some sense into the child who, after all, is the one who should be trained. As with the child, so with you. You want to make progress? Then you have to abide by certain rules, you have to keep calm, you have to take the middle way. If you work too hard, you are so busy thinking about the hard work that you are putting in that you have no time to think about the results you hope to obtain. So, the middle way is a very simple means of telling you that you must not work so hard that you cannot see the wood for the trees. You must not laze so much that nothing at all is done. Go somewhere between the two extremes and you will find that your progress is remarkable. Too many people really slave at a thing in the hope of getting it done. They try so hard that all their energy, all their brain power is devoted to trying, and nothing is left for attaining. If you try too hard, it is like a car racing along in low gear, all fuss and splutter, and making hardly any progress. The power of the mind. It is unfortunately possible for anyone to have anything that one wants. There are certain laws of nature, or, if you prefer, of the occult, which makes it possible for anyone to have success or money if they will follow simple rules. We have tried to show throughout this course that occultism, which really means that which is unknown, follows absolutely sensible laws and rules, and that there is nothing mystical about such things. For that purpose we are going to tell you how to get what you want. Let us say, though, that when we say get what you want, we emphasize and re-emphasize that one should strive for the spiritual values, one should at all times work with determination to increase one's worth in the next life. A million or two would be very useful, let us hasten to agree on that, but it would be a snare and a delusion if we had a million or two at the expense of the next life. Our stay on earth is 154, temporary, and again we state that every effort of ours upon this earth should be devoted to learning and to improving ourselves so that we are worth more when we move into the next life. Let us, then, strive for spirituality, let us strive that we may show kindness to others, and that true humility, which must not be confused with false modesty, but the humility which assists us on our climb upwards. Everything is in a state of movement, all life is movement, even death is movement because cells are breaking down and turning into other compounds. Let us remember at all times that one cannot stand still on a tightrope, one can either go forwards or backwards. Our endeavors should be to go forward, that is, we should move forward into spirituality, into kindness, into understanding for others, not backwards where we should be among the money grabbers, those who cling to temporal possessions rather than striving to attain richness of the spirit. But, let us show you how you may gain all you desire. The mind can give us all that we ask if we will let it. There are immense powers latent within the subconscious. Unfortunately, most people are not taught how to contact the subconscious. We function at 1/10 consciousness, and, at most, 1/10 of our abilities. By aligning the subconscious on our side, we can achieve miracles as did the prophets of old. It is useless to pray idly and without being specific. It is useless to pray with an empty mind because one's words will echo hollowly if one does so. Use your brain, use your mind, use the great possibilities of the subconscious. There are certain inviolable steps which always must be followed. First, decide precisely what you want, be absolutely definite. You must know what you want, you must say what you want, and you must visualize it. What exactly do you want? It will not do to say you want a lot of money, it will not do to say that you want a new car or a new wife or a new husband. You must state exactly what it is that you want. You must visualize it, picture it in your mind, and hold that picture firmly before you. If you want money, state quite definitely how much you want. It must be a definite sum. About 500,000 will not do, it must be definite. If you are wise, however, you will not bother so much about money, about the mundane things. You will want to be like Gandhi, Buddha, Christ, Saint Peter, Street anybody. You, 155, will strive to gain virtues which will be of use to you when you leave this life. When you have decided what you want, you come to stage 2. We have already told you that you must give in order that you may receive. What are you going to give? If you are asking for a certain sum of money, and that sum must be exactly specified, are you willing to give a tithe, which, of course, is a tenth of that money? Are you willing to give help to other people who are not so fortunately placed as you? It is futile to say yes, when I get this money I will give a tenth of it. You must start helping before that, you must start assisting those in need. If you do that you will be living the spirit of give that you may receive. Again, you must be definite, you must be absolutely precise. The third item is, when do you want this money or this car, or new husband or new wife? It is not enough to say that you want it sometime in the indefinite future, and of course it is absurd to say that you want it immediately because there are physical laws which cannot be broken. It is not possible for a god to drop a gold brick into your waiting hands, and in any case if the brick did fall it would probably crush a few toes. Your time limit must be physically feasible. You could, for instance, say that you will have the money by such and such a month in such and such a year. But you could not say that you would have a fortune within the next 5 minutes because that would be contrary to the laws of nature, and it would nullify your thought power. What are you going to do to realize your ambition? Supposing, just by way of illustration, that you want a new car. Well, first of all, can you drive? It would be of little point to desire a new car unless you knew how to drive, so if you are determined to have a new car, take driving lessons first. Then you can decide on the type of car you want, and all that sort of thing. If you are looking for a husband or a wife, make sure that you in your turn are fitted to be an adequate partner, make sure that you understand the law of give and take and are prepared to do your share to make a success of marriage, because marriage is not just a case of take all and give naught. When you take a partner you also have to give a partner to the other person. When you get married you cease to be one person, and you take on the problems and the worries and the pleasures of two persons, before you can hope to be, 156, satisfactorily and happily married. You have to be sure that you are able physically, mentally and spiritually to be a satisfactory partner yourself. As our fifth item we are going to say that the written word is stronger than the spoken word, while the two together make an unbeatable combination. Write out what you want. Write it out as simply and as clearly as you can. You know what you want, so write it down. Do you want to be spiritual? Who is your ideal in the world of spirituality? Enumerate that person's abilities, talents, and strong points of character. Write it all down. If you are trying to get money, write down the precise sum you want, write down when you want it, and make clear in writing that you are going to help other people. Make clear that you are going to tithe. When you have written all this down as simply and as clearly as you can, write at the end, "I will give that I may receive." You must also add a note stating how you are going to work for the desired result, for bear in mind once again that you cannot get anything for nothing. Everything has to be paid for in some form or other. There is no such thing as getting something for free. If you receive $100 unexpectedly, you have to give $100 worth of service. If you expect other people to help you, then you must first help them. Assuming that you have written all this down, read your statement aloud to yourself 3 times a day. There is power gained if you can read it aloud in the quietude and privacy of your own room. Read it in the morning before you leave your bedroom, read it at lunchtime, and read it once again before going to sleep at night, so that 3 times a day, at least, you have read your affirmation, which has thus become akin to a mantra. As you read this, feel that the money or car, or whatever it is that you want, is coming to you. Be positive about it, imagine that you have the thing desired, imagine that it is actually within your grasp. The stronger you can think about this, that you can imagine all this, the more positive will the reaction be. It is a waste of effort to think, "Well, I only hope it works, I only hope I shall get it, but I have my doubts." That will invalidate your mantra immediately. You must be quite positive and absolutely constructive all the time, and you must not permit any doubts to enter. If you will adopt these steps, you will drive a thought into your subconscious, and the subconscious is, 157, 9 times cleverer than you are. If you can interest your subconscious, then you will get help, more help than you believed possible. It is a fact proved time after time that when one makes money, other money comes more easily. A millionaire, for instance, would tell you that after he has made 1 million, 2, 3, or 4 millions come very much more easily and with little additional work. The more money one has, the more money is attracted to one. It works on the law akin to that of magnetism. Again, let us caution you that there are things of greater value than money. Once again, let us say that no one has ever taken a single coin into the next world, and the more money you have, the more you leave for other people. The more you strive for money, the more you contaminate yourself, and make it difficult for yourself to aspire and to attain to the spiritual values. The more good you do for others, the more good you take away with you. Life on earth is hard, and one of the hardest things of all is the falsification of values. At the present time, people think that money is all that matters. So long as we have enough that we may eat, clothe ourselves and be sheltered, that will suffice. But we can never have too much spirituality, we can never have too much purity of thought, we can never help others too much, for in helping others we help ourselves. We suggest that you read and reread this lesson. Perhaps it is the most important lesson yet. If you follow the instruction, you will find that you can have almost anything you want. What do you want? The choice must be yours, for you can have whatever it is that you desire. A pointer. Money. Success on this earth? And then eclipse and a start all over again? Or will you choose spirituality, purity, and service to others? It may mean poverty or near poverty on the earth, which, after all, is only a speck of dust floating in the void. But after this short, short life, there comes the greater world where purity and spirituality is the coin of the realm, and where money, the currency of the world of earth, has no value. The choice is yours. Lesson 23. It is most regrettable that certain words have acquired such an 158 unsavory connotation. There are a number of words which are good words, descriptive words, in all languages, but which through misuse throughout perhaps centuries have undergone a complete change of meaning. We could refer to the word mistress as an illustration. Just a few years ago, within the memory of our grandparents, the word mistress was an honorable one indeed, indicating a lady who was to be respected as mistress of the household, the lady of the house, a fit partner for the man of the house. By misuse it has now acquired a meaning which is altogether different from that which it originally possessed. We are not going to talk about old mistresses, nor old masters, but it seemed an appropriate form of example because we are going to talk in this lesson about another word, the meaning of which has become distorted throughout the years. Imagination is a word which now is in sore disgrace. Years ago, a man of imagination was a man of sensitive ideas, one who could write, one who could compose music or poetry. It was, in fact, absolutely essential for a gentleman to be possessed of imagination. Nowadays it appears that imagination indicates some poor frustrated woman suffering from hysteria or on the verge of a mental breakdown. People brush off experiences, which they would far better study, with the exclamation, "Oh, it's all your imagination. Don't be so silly." Imagination, then, is a word that is in poor repute today, but controlled imagination is a key which can unlock many experiences which are at present locked in the veil of mystery which surrounds most people when they refer to occult matters. It is well to remember time and time again that in any battle between the imagination and the will, it is always the imagination which wins. People pride themselves upon their will power, upon their indomitable courage, upon the fact that nothing frightens them. They assure bored listeners that with their will power they can do anything at all. The whole truth of the matter is that with their will power they can do nothing unless the imagination agrees to permit it. These people of much vaunted will power are actually those who have managed somehow, usually by accident, to let the imagination believe that a good dose of will power would be useful in 159, this particular instance. We repeat, and any competent authority will agree with us, that in the matter of imagination and will power it is without exception imagination that wins. There is no greater power. Do you still doubt that you can will yourself to do things when your imagination does not want you to? Consider this, let us pose a hypothetical problem because that appears to be the modern way of doing things. We have before us a street devoid of traffic. There is no traffic about, there are no curious sightseers, so we have the whole street to ourselves. Let us paint a path some 2 feet wide, or 3 feet, if you prefer, from one sidewalk to the other. Undisturbed by the thought of avoiding traffic, or unperturbed by the serious stares of onlookers, you would have not the slightest difficulty nor hesitation in stepping off one sidewalk onto your 2 or 3 feet wide path and walk sedately across the road to the other sidewalk. This would not cause your breath rate to increase, it would not cause your heart to flutter, it would be one of the simplest things you had ever been called upon to do. Will you agree with us so far? You can walk along the painted pathway without a thought of fear because you know that the ground is not going to give way beneath you, you know that except in the case of an earthquake or a building falling over on top of you, you are quite safe, and if by some singular misfortune you should trip and fall to the ground, no great harm would be done because you cannot fall further than your own height. Now let us alter the pictures somewhat. Let us say that we are still in the street, and we move to a building which is about 20 stories high. We will get into the elevator and move upwards, up to the beautifully flat roof. As we stand on the roof and we look across the street, we observe that we are quite level with another building 20 stories high just across from us. If we look over the wall and down at the roadway beneath, we can just see the painted line that we made. Now, we are going to have a board 2 or 3 feet wide, in other words, a board precisely as wide as was our painted line. We will stretch it across the street 20 stories high across the street, and we will anchor it so firmly that it cannot move. We will anchor it so securely that it cannot sway or bounce. We will examine it most carefully to see that, 160, there is nothing at all which could trip you or make your footsteps uncertain. You have the same width of pathway as you did on ground level. Can you walk across the plank which is fixed securely 20 stories above the street, and reach the other side of the street, reach the roof of the other building? If your imagination says you can, then indeed you can and without any great trouble. But if your imagination is not so complacent, then your pulse will race at the mere thought of it, you will feel butterflies in the stomach, you might even feel worse than that. But why? You have already walked across the road, so why can you not walk across this beautifully firm board? The answer is, of course, that your imagination starts working. Your imagination tells you that here is danger, that if you slip, if you falter, you will step off the edge of the board, you will fall 20 stories down to destruction. It does not matter how much one tries to reassure you, unless your imagination can be assured, no amount of willpower can help. If you try to assert your willpower, you might have a nervous breakdown, you will start to tremble, you will turn pale and your breath will come in stertorous gasps. We have certain mechanisms built into us which protect us from danger, certain automatic safeguards are built into the human mechanism so that a human cannot normally run into foolish danger. Imagination makes it almost impossible for a person to walk the plank, and no amount of telling would enable a person to realize that it really was perfectly safe. You need to imagine that you can do it. Until you really can imagine yourself stepping up to the plank, getting onto it, and walking firmly and confidently across, then you cannot do it. If one wills oneself to do a thing when the imagination says no, then one does indeed risk a nervous breakdown, for we are going to repeat once again that in any battle between the imagination and the willpower, the imagination always wins. Forcing ourselves to do something when all the alarm signals are clanging within us can wreck one's nerves, wreck one's health. Some people are desperately afraid of passing a graveyard on a lonely road at midnight. If the occasion arises when they have to pass a cemetery at night, they feel their scalp tingle, their hair stands on end, 161, their palms begin to perspire, and every perception is heightened, every impression is exaggerated, and they are indeed keyed up to make a prodigious leap to safety should the appearance of a ghost apparently call for escape. People who do not like their work and have to force themselves to do their work, often bring into use an escape mechanism. Some of these escape mechanisms lead to rather weird results. They may be blessings in disguise, because if warnings are not heeded, mental breakdowns can occur. We are going to relate an actual instance which is well known to us. We know the instance, we know the man, and we know the result. Here it is. This man of our acquaintance did a lot of standing. He stood at one of those tall desks and entered figures in a ledger. His work was such that he had to stand. The work could not be done easily sitting down. The man was competent at his job. He was good at these figures, but he had a phobia. He was truly desperately afraid that someday, somehow he would make a mistake and perhaps be accused of embezzling a sum of money from his employers. Actually, the man was painfully honest. He was one of those rare individuals who make hard work of honesty, one of those individuals who would not even take a packet of book matches from a hotel, or would not even keep a newspaper which he found on a bus seat. But even so, he was afraid that his employers did not know of his honesty, and that made him feel very bad indeed about his work. For a number of years he went about the work becoming more and more unhappy, more and more preoccupied. He discussed a change of work with his wife, but she had no sympathy with him, and so he kept to the same job. But the imagination got to work also. First the man got gastric ulcers. With careful attention and diet those ulcers were cured, and he returned to work, returned to standing at a desk. It occurred to him one day that if he did not have the ability to stand, then he would not have the ability to keep the job. Some weeks later an ulcer appeared on his foot. For a few days he hobbled to work and endured great pain, but the ulcer got worse, and he had to remain in bed for a time. Being in bed, being away from his office, his recovery was quite speedy, and then he went back to work. All the time his subconscious mind was nagging him. It reasoned, 1, 162, supposed, something like this: well, I got out of that horrible job by having a foot complaint. They cured me too quickly, so let me have a worse foot complaint. A few months after the man's return, presumably cured, he got another ulcer, this time on the ankle. It was such a bad ulcer that he could not move his ankle. Eventually he was taken to hospital, and as the ulcer became worse and worse, he had to have an operation. After this he was discharged cured, and went back to his job. Now the hatred of the job was growing on him. Soon another ulcer appeared, this time between the ankle and the knee. This time it was so bad, resisting all efforts to cure it, that he had to have his leg amputated at the knee. This time, to his great joy, the employer would not have him back, saying that he would not have a cripple around, a cripple who was always falling sick. The doctors at the hospital knew quite a lot about this case, and so they arranged for the man to do some other work. Work for which he had shown considerable aptitude while in hospital. It was a form of handicraft instruction. He liked the work and had much success at it. There was now no fear that he would go to prison for some mistake which would cause him to be accused of embezzling, so his health improved, and, so far as is known at the present time, he is carrying on this work and are making a success at it. This is rather an extreme case, true. But every day we see high-pressure businessmen who are in fear of their jobs, in fear of their employer, or in fear of losing face, working at high internal pressures and then seeking to escape by way of gastric ulcers, in fact, are known as the executive's complaint. Imagination can topple an empire, imagination can build an empire as well, remember. If you will cultivate your imagination and control it, you can have whatever you want. It is not possible to dictate to your imagination, not possible to tell it what it shall do, because friend imagination is something like friend mule. You can lead a mule but you cannot drive him, and so you can lead your imagination but you cannot drive it. It needs practice, but it can be done. Well, how are you going to set about controlling your imagination? It is only a matter of faith, of practice. Think of some situation which, 163, excites your fear or your distaste, and then overcome it by faith, by persuading your imagination that you can do a thing no matter what others can or cannot do. Persuade yourself that you are some special sort of being, if you like. It does not matter what method you adopt to yourself, so long as you get your imagination working on your behalf.